And welcome, everybody, to, what is this? Off the Hook Overtime. Yes, that's it. Here we are on YouTube, channel 2600. It's cold in here this week. Wow. Yeah, we have a different studio for this show, and it's chilly.
A.K.A. Off the Clock.
Yeah, I guess you could call it that. So, obviously, Kyle, you made it okay.
I did.
Rob, did you make it all right?
I did indeed.
Can you verify that we are, in fact, broadcasting over YouTube?
We are, in fact, YouTubing.
With a loose definition of the word broadcasting. Yeah. Gila, I assume you made it okay into Skype?
I am, in fact, here. And welcome to the 16 people who are currently online with us.
Wow. That number was much higher only a second ago. I don't know what we did. I guess when we started talking, that made people leave. And Alex, did you make it okay?
Yeah, I am. I'm here.
Okay. By the way, you can stop calling us too. I'm not sure why you're calling the call-in line, but you're already here.
How did you know that was me?
Did you think we didn't have caller ID? Wow.
But okay. It shouldn't come up with my phone number on it. I mean, it's a number that's not my name.
Well, apparently it is.
Yeah, I don't know.
Let me try something.
We'll check that.
No, don't try anything. Don't call us because you're tying up the line for listeners.
This we just announced
their opportunity to voice what's on their mind.
It's about them.
Yeah. Anyway. So we have so few people. So if only one of them calls, I guess that's something. But if we had more people would call. I think that's how it works. And now the phone's ringing. Is that an actual call? I haven't given out the phone number yet. 802-321-4225 is our phone number. 802-321-HACK. I guess pick it up, even though somebody was calling before I gave out the number. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook Overtime. Is that supposed to be funny?
I think that we were just getting things warmed up.
Okay, it's ringing again. So let's try it one more time. And good evening. You're on Off the Hook Overtime. Go ahead.
Yes. Hi, Emmanuel.
Rebel, we have not heard your voice in a very long time. Where have you been? We just assumed you were in the gulag in Russia or something.
No, I'm in Indiana now.
The gulag in Indiana is almost as bad. Wow. What happened?
Well, all right. Let's see. What can I start? Let's see. You were talking about shoplifting on Off the Hook on the radio.
Yes.
First of all, when is Off the Hook, when is WBAI going to have you guys in the studio and be able to take phone calls there?
That's a good question. Now, we could probably go in ourselves, but we can't bring everybody with us, at least, you know, without having a conversation with them. But, you know, maybe we'll do it soon.
Yeah, because it'd be nice to take phone calls again. And speaking of shoplifting, a lot of people are using the self-checkout for shoplifting. They're taking, like, you know, like five items and, like, scanning only one and all that other stuff. And
I'm sorry, I was distracted. Can you repeat that?
Okay. You were talking about shoplifting in retail stores. People are using the self-checkout to, you know, shoplift. They take like maybe five items and only scan one or two, or scan the cheapest one and keep the expensive ones, you know, things like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but that computer is pretty sophisticated. That computer can tell when you do something wrong.
When we were traveling, we saw a demonstration of a scanner that you just put a pile of things down. It scans everything and it's completely covered every angle.
When did we see that?
In Chicago.
Oh, yes, we did at the place where I bought cough drops or something.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. But it was only a couple of items, but like, you know, 20 items, that would be impressive.
Yeah, but you think that that's the kind of thing that's advancing because people are trying to little things, mm-hmm. ways to defeat it, and they record all of that. So maybe they don't catch people individually, but they're pushing even further. And like these other stores that seem to be around, but they haven't opened. They're like the Amazon stores where you don't pay, you just walk out. That kind of thing, where it's just the whole store is self-checkout.
Yeah, you put things in your pocket, just walk out, and you're labeled with what you have on you that has been logged or not logged. That's the world we're moving towards, where, you know, you just are completely accountable for everything you're carrying and doing at all times, and that will be normal.
And facial recognition is used for your entry, and yeah.
Man, this is why I sound so apprehensive all the time, because I'm just worried about where we are heading in so many ways. It's just almost invariably not a good place.
Well, I'm keen to wonder if those stores maybe aren't opening because of the phenomenon we were talking about. Because Rebel's right, like there's all kinds of little things that are ways to get around the things, and it's all to cut costs. And then it goes back in this like feedback loop to punish the customer, or pass it along to the customer.
Well, you know, I think that customers are in a sense, you know, right to be kind of mad about this, right? And you know, where you just finished shopping at Walmart or something, you have this giant cart of stuff, and then you have to check it out yourself. I mean, you used to have somebody there to help you, somebody there to bag it. You know, mm-hmm. The savings isn't being passed on to you. You're asking to do some form of labor that a human being used to do on your behalf. That used to be a human being's job. And I think people are almost justifying to themselves that, well, if I'm doing a little bit of the work that somebody else should be doing on behalf of this corporation, then let's say Walmart is essentially stealing my labor at this point, maybe I'll take one item. Maybe I will just forget to scan one of those items. I mean, it's in a sense a form of retribution. This is how I've seen it described by people, that it's a form of retribution. If you're going to make me work, then I'm going to get paid for that work. That's the theory.
It's like self-help law.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I'm sympathetic and all that, but I think it's kind of a poor excuse. I mean, look, I agree that what retailers do many times is unfair and takes advantage of people. But I just think that excuse of, well, I have to pass the barcode over the scanner now, so I want to be paid for that. I think there's better arguments. I really do.
Of course there's better arguments. I don't think it's the most cogent way, but the principle behind it, I think, is what's interesting. I don't think it carries the day in terms of whether the action is justified. Certainly not.
It chips away at the trust, right? It's part of yes. the overall squeeze, whether it's shrinkflation or, you know, with boxes being smaller, or costs going up, all the different ways people feel like they are, you know, run through the ringer, so to speak.
You know, I bought a bottle of vitamins last week that was the same size as the last bottle that I bought that had 100 pills in it. This one had 65. They didn't change the price. The price was the same, but the bottle was the same size. The number of pills is what changed. And of course, I didn't have the old bottle with me, so I couldn't hold it up and compare it. You know, when I got home and had the two next to each other, I said, oh, wow, look what they did. So yeah, I can feel a little bit of that outrage. That's shrinkflation right there. That's what they do.
What else have you observed, Rebel?
Well, yeah, that's what I've you know, like the cereal they used to fill it up to the top, you know, with cereal, but now they fill it up only half, and that they put air in the, like, you know how like you blow up like a plastic bag with air.
Well, they tell you, the product may have settled in. Shipping, whatever that right. means.
I also like to talk about Bluetooth trackers. My electric bike was stolen again, but it was stolen from somebody I don't know.
Wait, hold on. First of all, you had your bike stolen once before. We all lived through that. Now you're saying you had your bike stolen from somebody you didn't know? Can you explain
right.
that?
I left my bike in front of a vehicle that I was in, and I have or somebody get on it and run, but I thought for a split second I knew, but I was running after them, and I did not, you know, thank goodness, this, you know, talking about surveillance, this car vehicle had a dash cam. We got the dash cam footage, and no, I did not recognize that person.
It was stolen by somebody you didn't know, not from somebody
right.
you didn't know. Okay, all right, so that's
clear. Oh, by, right, did I say from?
You said okay. from, that really confused me. So wait, the bike was in front of a car that you were in?
Right.
All right. And you weren't on your bike. You were in a car, and you thought that the bike would be safe in front of the car. And then somebody just got on it and rode away.
Yeah, right. Exactly. And then we have the dash cam, and then, you know, and then I have a Bluetooth tracker on it, and it's not very accurate, but this person took it from Queens,
uh-huh.
from, you know, Flushing, on the Long Island Railroad, because I saw it on
took it on a train? Wow.
Yeah. Out to Babylon, Long Island.
Really? Okay, so you're able to track it like that. So what happens in Babylon?
But I haven't tracked it. So to a house in Babylon, we went to the house and, you know, had the police there. And, you know, nobody seems to know, you know, we didn't look upstairs because it was like one of those four family type houses. And we didn't ask the people upstairs. But now it's on another street in Babylon. And, you know, the police need you there. And it's really a whole big thing. I mean,
but if the Bluetooth tracker was tracking it to a particular location, how could you not find it at that location?
Well, because it's a Bluetooth tracker and it's tracking only if other Bluetooth type of devices are near it. So it may not be in that particular address. It may be around it. It may be next door to it. Maybe.
Well, then you need to stake out the neighborhood. You know, it's premature to call the cops. Just sit in the car, maybe the same car you were sitting in before, and wait for that bike to go riding down the street, and eventually it will.
That's true, but if it had a GPS tracker, I would see it moving, and I'd know where. I'd probably be able to find it.
Well, maybe because your bike gets stolen so frequently, you should have a GPS tracker on it.
Yeah, now how does that work? I mean, because it needs batteries constantly. The Bluetooth tracker just needs like a watch battery, and it just uses a little bit of power. The GPS tracker needs, you know, more.
It almost sounds like you're asking if there's a way to boost the sensitivity of locating with the Bluetooth signal because you don't have something as accurate as like, for instance, GPS. So I'm not sure exactly what that you said. It's like a little coin cell. What that system is,
right,
or
it's
how?
It's a Bluetooth tracker. It uses Bluetooth. If somebody else is in Bluetooth range, it kind of matches like by triangulation, I guess.
Using other known location data,
right,
from like a router or some device. I mean, okay. This is like the AirTag thing that Apple has.
I have an app with it. Yeah, there's an app with it that you know.
Okay.
Gives you a map, but a GPS tracker would have exact locations whether it's moving or not.
Sure. It'd be like live. But if you could make like a little antenna or a way to like be more sensitive than just the interface that you're using while you're in the area, you might have a sense of like, okay, I can estimate exactly how far away it is using a system that's a lot less granular, like really kind of coarse. It's just telling you, okay, it's here this day. It doesn't give you anything else like detailed, as you're saying.
Right, but you want to hide it there. You don't want to, you know, you want it small enough to be able to hide it somewhere. I had it like under.
So have you given up, or are you just thinking for the future?
Well, I mean, I'm trying to have the Suffolk County Police, you know, try. They said, well, you need to be there. Well, I don't have a way of getting out there. You know, it wasn't my car that I was in. And we have the surveillance video from the dash cam, and we showed that to the, you know, detectives and.
Wait, so you have the person's face?
Yes.
And did you try showing that to the people in Babylon, see if anybody recognized that person?
Yeah, they don't. They say they don't recognize it, no.
Uh-huh. Or are they lying? It's quite possible.
Maybe. I mean, well, it was a older type person. I don't know.
What,
I
old
mean,
people
I,
can't
I
lie?
Know. I don't
old
know.
Old people
I
mean, are some of the best liars around, believe me.
You're pursuing it on your own behalf, so
how soon after you went out there did it suddenly go to another house a few blocks away?
About 2-3 days.
Okay, so for 2 or 3 days after you went out, it was still in the same place.
Right.
Okay. Well, that doesn't point to a panicked transfer of stolen property. So.
Right.
If
I was to tell the news this.
I don't think the news.
This is the bike I've had for 2.5 years. It was like $3,000.
Uh-huh.
And if I was to tell the news, if I was to make a GoFundMe page now saying my bike was stolen, I wouldn't get anything. But if I was to tell the news this, then, you know, they would do, hey, this person makes a living by delivering food, and he's now set up a GoFundMe page for it. I would probably make lots of money. I mean, not lots, but enough to get a new bike.
Well, I can't advise you on what to do, but... It's unfortunate. It's unfortunate that happened, but maybe you can offer some people out there some incentive to help you. Maybe they can keep an eye out for it or for that person and then let you know.
Well,
when
you live
something.
In Suffolk County, maybe you. Can
yeah,
go to
but I don't know everybody in Suffolk County. That's the thing. You know, it's not as tight as you might believe. Anything else? Any other adventures?
No. Would you like to hear a demonstration of what annoying voicemails that we have at work?
I'm not going to get out of this, am I? Okay, make it quick, though. We have other people okay. waiting.
Okay. Hold on.
I assume we do. That's long enough to hold, isn't it?
Click, click.
Yeah, I think...
Edited or recorded for training and quality assurance purposes.
Okay, no, I don't have
if you are a driver, please press 1. For complimentary directions, please enter the 4-digit extension of the party you are trying to reach.
Emmanuel, are you there?
I'm here.
Okay, I'm going to press 0.
I'm sorry. That is an invalid entry. Please try again.
Is he listening to voice as well?
What?
Is he listening to voice
as
well?
That is an invalid entry. Please try again. Please enter the 4-digit extension of the party you are trying to reach.
2600, that's what I would say.
Oh, yeah, that's a good idea.
Please enter... I'm sorry, that is an invalid entry.
Yeah, okay. How dare you?
Please enter the 4-digit extention
Fine.
Of the party
one,
you are trying
two,
to
Fine, 1, 2, 3, 4, if you're going to be...
No, I don't have buttons on my telephone.
What did you just
I'm
hit?
Sorry.
You just hit buttons.
That is an invalid entry. Please try again.
How stupid
Please
do you think we are?
4-digit extension.
Okay.
I'm sorry. That is an invalid entry.
Anyway, that's,
What was the purpose of that? Rebel, what was the purpose of hearing that guy say that? I don't understand. What were you thinking?
They don't have a receptionist there.
They don't...
But,
I can call random numbers and get similar things. So what were you trying to prove?
I don't know, that if you press 0, it's, it says, or if you don't have buttons on your telephone. What about all those people that have rotary phones? They can't enter an extension.
It's 1990 calling. Yes, I know this. We've known this for a long, long time. Nothing has changed.
You can pulse the ringer.
You can't.
The handset,
Rebel, closing thoughts before we open up to another phone call.
Let's see.
If you don't have closing thoughts, that's fine, too.
Maybe we can, there's an idea. I think artificial intelligence stole people's identity. They charged... they open credit cards in people's names, and they charge things.
AI is committing credit card fraud. That would be kind of cool,
right? Yeah, because I get calls from AI sometimes. Like, it waits for the word hello.
Uh huh.
If you don't say it hello, or if you don't say anything, or if you say something else, it doesn't.
Okay. So Rebel, what I suggest: pick up the phone and say goodbye. And see what happens.
Oh, that's a good idea.
Yeah, just do that. Make that a habit from now on. Whenever the phone, it rings, pick it up and say goodbye. Why don't you practice now?
I'll do that next time.
Practice now. Go ahead.
Okay. All right. Hello?
No, you did it wrong. Oh, boy. He's messing with me, isn't he?
Okay. I have to go.
Yes, you do.
All right.
Good talking to you. Good hearing from you.
Yeah, be well. Sure. Although, by the way, I'll be at the November 20... No, not the October 2600, but the November 2600 meeting.
Okay, so if those of you who don't want to see Rebel, October might be your last chance. And that's coming up not this week, but the week after. Right?
Right.
Have that right? Yeah. Okay. All right, then.
Okay.
Goodbye.
Bye.
And our phone number... is 802-321-4225, 802-321-HACK. Alex, we can't see you for some reason, so if you're trying to say something, we have no idea.
I don't know, what's going on? Am I back now?
Now you're back. You're doing something to your camera.
Yeah, I think it's because I had two instances of Skype running on two different machines, and I was connected into the same conversation. And I did that because I couldn't get enough of that repartee you had with Rebel. It was exhilarating.
You connected to Skype twice with the same conversation?
I did. Yeah, same account signed in on two different machines.
I don't understand that. I don't understand what you could possibly gain from that.
I wanted to see if it would show both instances of me on each client.
And instead, it simply... it blocked out your face so we couldn't see you at all.
That's right.
So now you know. Now you know what will happen if you mess with Skype like that.
Yeah. Don't try this at home, kids.
802-321-4225. 802-321-HACK is our telephone number. We will wait a few more minutes for another phone call. And if we don't get one, we'll have an early night. Which, go ahead, Rob.
So Rebel mentioned AI stealing things. Can we talk about the other story involving 2600 and AI and a couple of books?
Oh, yeah. I forgot about that. Yeah, I should have been good and pissed off on the show. We discovered that there's a database. I don't have it handy in front of me, but there's a database where you can type in book authors or titles and see if those books have been used to train artificial intelligence. And both 2600 books, Dear Hacker, the letters to the editor of 2600, and The Best of 2600, these huge books, they both have been used without our permission. Now, mind you, maybe, you know, Wiley gave their permission, the publisher of the book, I don't know. But it's still unsettling to realize that the words of our writers, the words of the magazine, are being used to train artificial intelligence, and we had nothing to say about it.
Yeah, I have the story in front of me. This is a story on The Atlantic, and it's part of their series on a collection of books called Books 3. That's one word, B-O-O-K-S and the numeral 3. And this data set is based on a collection of pirated e-books that's been going around, most of them published in the past 20 years. And it is over 191,000 books. And this collection, obviously, it's unauthorized copies of at least some of these books. Apparently, according to the rest of the reporting, I think it's most or all pirated. But it is being used by Bloomberg. It is being used by Meta. It is being used by big companies to train generative AI. And both 2600 books are in there, which is not only did they not ask 2600's permission, ask your permission, Emmanuel, as the author, but also the permission of all the people, since these books are compilations of things from the magazine, letters and articles. They don't have the permission of the countless hackers all over the world who have written those articles and letters.
That's true. Now, maybe, Alex, I'm going to ask you, why should we be upset at this?
Well, look, I think there's two ways to look at it. And I've been on the periphery of some of the, there's quite a few lawsuits out there. I mean, I believe that we talked about the lawsuit last week, didn't we, with the Authors Guild. On the show, didn't we? Yeah. So that's you know, well, look, there's two ways I think of looking at this in terms of fair use, right? Because that's ultimately what this boils down to. Is it a fair use? Is it a non-infringing use of the copyright to train some kind of AI model? Right? I mean, what does it mean to use your data in training a separate model there, right? And based on the traditional considerations that you would analyze to determine whether or not something is a fair use, one of the major considerations is whether or not it's being used in a commercial context. And if it's being used in a commercial context, it's very much less likely to be a fair use. Now, here, and many of these contexts in which the AIs are operating, these generative AIs and large language models are operating that have been trained on this massive amount of data, they're operating in some kind of commercial environment. Right? There's subscriptions to these types of things or separate instances. And so that would indicate to me that, you know, it would be easy to argue that this is not a fair use, that it's probably an infringing use. But then think about this on the other hand. And you made the point yourself, Rob, which was Books 3, that repository of data that mostly came from these pirated books. And I mean, who knows what kind of crap was infesting those PDFs and files too, that they had ingested. I can only imagine it was very unsavory. Your two books, Emmanuel, were just one out of 191,000. So the amount of difference they might have made to a particular training model would be considered potentially de minimis and not actionable. So yeah, on that basis, you could also then argue, well, maybe this is a fair use of the copyrighted material, because it's not like it's going to spit out the entirety of your book if somebody asks it to. You know, it might do something in that style, but then that's a matter of inspiration, not necessarily copyright infringement. So these are very much unsettled issues that I think you can look at one way or another, depending upon which side of the copyright you're on. But it also these are also issues that are very much unsettled and before the courts right now that I think we're going to learn a lot about. And I think that the law is going to evolve a lot in response to this technology.
All I know is if we did something similar without asking permission, they'd be all over us, you know, whether it's music or video or even printed words. I'm sure that legal teams would be saying, did you ask permission or not? And we'd be held to account, whereas here it's just expected.
We were held to account for something very similar. Think about this analog, right? These large language models, they're ingesting these massive amounts of data that we know from the court pleadings, probably a verified court pleading, is in fact stolen data that of pirated books and things. And you consider what Aaron Swartz was doing way back when. He was ingesting lots of data, academic journals. He figured out how to get academic journals without necessarily having to pay for every single page of them. He wasn't using it in some, he wasn't training some language model on this. He didn't intend to sell licenses to whatever the corpus of data that he was generating was. He was simply doing it for the sake of collecting information, scraping that data for the public good.
And not in a fraudulent way that, you know, it was never said they had the right to charge for it in the first place.
And the United States government charged him under the Computer Fraud and Abuse Act, refused to settle the case, and he took his own life.
Yep.
Well, and he was making it available for training humans.
Yes.
Yes.
I guess that's a way of looking at it.
Democratizing the availability of it for humans to use in their own training because it was a costly part of study and access to this knowledge was, in his view, unfair.
Mm-hmm.
And retrograde in the context of, you know, growing and expanding knowledge with the advent of technology.
You know, maybe I just don't know how many books there are out there, but it seemed like under 200,000 books seemed like a fairly low number. I thought there were millions of books out there. So should we be honored that we were selected twice, have two of our books training AI out there?
Yes.
Okay, well, then I'll look at it that way.
We can maintain both.
You know, if you're training AI on Chaucer, if you're training AI on Shakespeare, I mean, those are the great stories, but you can't necessarily, like, AI, and I was also interested because of the resolution of the Writers Guild strike and the new contract and what they said about AI. And basically they said that the writers can use it if they want to, but the studios can't force them to use it. But this is the thing. People talk like the way they write in Dear Hacker and in The Best of 2600. If you're trying to make something that's going to sound like today, you can't train it on Dostoevsky. So, yes, I think it is it's a great compliment that They try to train AI on you guys.
Then, you know, we're a piece of this. Moving forward, AI, what AI turns into, they're taking a bit of us with them. I'm just saying, you know, I'd like to get a little credit for that. All of us deserve a little credit because all of our words are in there somewhere. And it just seems only fair. Go ahead, Rob.
Yeah, I mean, we are in good company in this. One of the Atlantic's other articles about Books 3 goes into the authors represented. And, you know, there are all-time greats, Agatha Christie, William Shakespeare, R.L. Stein, Stephen King.
Shakespeare got in? Shakespeare
definitely got in, yeah. But also Nobel Prize winners, you know, Harold Pinter, Günter Grass, Bob Dylan, Octavio Paz, Christian publishers, sci-fi publishers, education publishers, university presses from all over the place. And lots of nonfiction, poetry, just it is a huge chunk of, I guess, if you were to look at the body of commonly pirated books out there, you would find stuff that is a fairly representative slice of human reading material. And we find ourselves among that. And maybe there's a little compliment there somehow.
You got to take what you can get, you know.
Well, I think there's also, you know, turnabout here. I mean, what happens when we really wield it against these kinds of actors and firms? I mean, we're just as, we have just as much right to it and can access it probably just as easily. We probably have a keen understanding of it all. And I think that, you know, maybe they do need some of the slap, like a little blowback or slap back from the people that they're wielding a lot of this stuff over, because it's been this sort of top down and people worshiping tech for years now. Mm-hmm. Bubble after bubble, whatever it is, just the sort of maintaining of power and treating people as though they're less than, and they can't possibly use the same tactics and come for them in the same way. And I really feel like they're foolish in thinking that all this nicey-nice stuff can't come back in totally different forms. Like, it's hilarious how well-behaved we've been in the face of how many tools there really are at our fingertips.
Go ahead, Rob.
Yeah, and I want to hear from our listeners on what they think about this. Give us a call, 1-802-321-HACK, or toll free at 1-833-755-2600, or tell us in the YouTube chat. We did get a response on Mastodon when we posted this story on the show's account, and G.I. Jack wants to know, did any of my letters to the editor that got published in 2600 get used for AI? Both honored and hopping steaming mad.
Yeah, that pretty much sums it up. And I think every letter that's in that book would have been included. Mm-hmm. So yeah. And I'm looking at the statistics for the books right now. Dear Hacker was 576 pages. I'm looking up Best of 2600 right now. You know, it's a significant number of pages. Feel free to say something while I'm looking up the number.
They are big, heavy books.
Yeah, that one's 888 pages. Okay, so we're talking about over 1,300 pages there. And that's you know, not to be in competition with Shakespeare here, but, you know, we've got a bunch of pages too, you know.
But the one difference between 2600 and Shakespeare is that Shakespeare is legally public domain. Everyone's allowed to do what they like with him.
Mm-hmm. I guess so. As we don't really care that much. All right. We have a phone call?
Yes, we do.
Okay. And you are on Off the Hook Overtime. Go ahead.
Yeah. Hello. Can you hear me?
Yes, we do hear you.
Yeah. No, I just wanted to talk a little bit about what you were talking about on the earlier show about shoplifting.
Yes, go ahead.
Yeah, so you said a couple of things. One of the things you said was that you were kind of downplaying it a little bit. And it's pretty much as bad as they say it is. I mean, I've seen it myself. I see it in Walgreens. I shop at Walgreens all the time. I see people literally just walking in and just walking out with stuff. I mean, they don't even conceal it anymore. Back in the day, people used to conceal it in their pockets and stuff. Now they just walk right out with it. They don't even care. And you also said, well, it's a small percentage of people who are doing this. Well, if that's true, that's even worse, because what that means is, and you're saying it's not political, of course it's political, because that means they're letting those people come out. If it's the same amount of people, same people doing this over and over again, that means the district attorneys, whoever it is, they keep letting these people out and they keep doing the same thing over and over again.
So well, it just sounds like someone's bad at their job. But how is that political if someone's just bad at their job if they're not prosecuting people? I don't get how that's a political...
It is. All this bail stuff, bail reform, letting people out with all that stuff going on is all part of it. Isn't that part of it? It's all part of the problem. Letting people out
I agree with the caller on this. I think it's indicative of a process problem rather than a policy problem rather than individual income.
I will add, though, that statistic is just the individuals that were caught. Mm-hmm. A lot of people don't get caught, so I empathize a little bit.
Right.
That's true.
I don't know. I just think there is a problem, though, and it's not just people who are hungry who just need a loaf of bread. There is some
organized, it's sport.
Yeah, that was the point we were making, I think, is that it's not just people who are desperate. It's part of like some kind of initiation or just sport now. But, you know, it's a complicated thing. It's not just because this person got elected or something like that. It's because of how we have evolved as a society, how big box stores now are places that few people seem to go to. Everyone buys things online. So this is a lot easier to get away with. And now that people are doing it, what are you going to do to stop it? It's a challenge, and nobody seems to have the answer right away.
Yeah, like they have no allegiance. Like there's no allegiance to the businesses themselves, and they see it also with the workers, who themselves are either overwhelmed or don't care. Like mm-hmm. their working conditions are just as bad as if they were there shoplifting themselves, you know, for whatever reason.
But let me ask you, caller, let's make you district attorney and tell me, how would you handle this? What do you think the best way to do it is?
If you're caught doing this three times, then there's going to be something more drastic, maybe a year in prison or something. I mean, you can't just keep letting these people out on the street. I'd probably give you three times. If maybe two or three times, and that's it. You're going to have to get locked up at least a year or two, a couple years.
So a year in prison for shoplifting, even if it's more than once, you think that's the right move?
Well, if it's a few times, one time, two times, maybe not. But if this is repeated thing happening, then why not? I mean, this person is. I was in Walgreens last week. I saw this guy who was literally fighting with. Somebody tried to stop him. He was trying to get out of the store with, I think it was pills. He had a bunch of things, aspirin and things or whatever.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, some innocent bystander tried to stop him. And there was a big fight there. He had a knife on him. I mean, it's just, some of these people, they'll do anything to get away.
Well, you're pointing at bigger issues there. Somebody has a weapon and they're you know, acting not in a sane manner. There are bigger issues that need to be dealt with, and prison isn't normally the answer for this. All kinds of ways of dealing with mental health need to be addressed, and they're not, and that is definitely a problem.
Yeah. I mean, it's terrible. I don't know if it's any worse. I was listening to the statistics you mentioned, so I don't know if it's really any worse or better. All I know is I'm seeing it more.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if it's any worse. Maybe it's the same thing. Maybe they just clean it up. Maybe the other side is just cleaning it up for political, you know, gain or whatever. But I just know that I see a lot of it. I see people, you know.
Look, the point I was making earlier is that I can find a way to blame Republicans for this. I can find a way to blame Democrats for this. I don't think either one of those is valid. I think it's a problem we have as society. I think we have to tackle it together as society. And not simply say this is happening because this person is in power. No, because the people doing this don't care. They're going to do it no matter what. And the challenges are going to exist no matter what part of the country you're in. So this is happening everywhere. Yeah, it happens more in big cities because there's more people in big cities. But
right.
It's a challenge that we have to get our heads together and figure out a way to deal with this.
Anyway, that's all I wanted to say.
Okay, well, thanks.
Thanks very much for taking my call.
Thanks for your call.
Thanks for listening.
Take care. Interesting perspective. Go ahead, Rob.
Yeah, I mean, you touched on it, but it's a much bigger issue than just somebody's walking into a store and not paying for stuff. You mentioned the mental health issues and the police and the legal system's handling of mental health issues has evolved a lot recently, but it's still garbage. And if somebody is compelled to shoplift by a mental health issue, they're going to keep doing it. And then under the legal system, they'll just keep doing it and they'll get themselves arrested. And maybe that'll end with them in jail for a long time for something that is not actually their fault, but it won't get them the help they need. And, you know, on the other hand, you have people shoplifting for survival, for work, for the financial gain. And, you know, the problem there is, why isn't there a better job for that person? Why isn't there a safer job for that person? And that, too, is a crime of society. So, yeah, solving this there's no easy answers to this. There's no simple quick fixes. It is something that, like, we are entrenched in a system that does not serve these needs.
Yeah. I don't see anybody minimizing this. I don't see people saying, oh, it's just kids being kids or anything stupid like that. I think a lot of us are confused as to what the best way forward is, but it certainly doesn't help when it's politicized.
And we can't kid ourselves about what type of society we have and then be like slapping our cheek, you know, with our jaw on the ground every time something like this happens, waiting for some narrative to be shunted into the conversation about who should be blamed. It's a terribly foolish way to approach what is becoming predictable, I think.
These are not hard crimes to commit. I mean, you know, we live in a society where it's quite possible to get away with things. The point is to live in a society where you don't want to be getting away with things. Yeah, you can have, you know, a fancy meal at a restaurant and then just run out the door and not pay. They trust you, you know, to give you everything and then ask for the check later. Why? Who knew that you could actually get all this stuff first and then run away? Yeah, people can figure that out, and people can start doing that en masse. It's a breakdown in our culture, and you have to ask yourself, why is that happening? What is leading people to act this way? And there are all kinds of other things you can point to, you know, violence and people just not listening to what others are saying. It's an intolerant society, etc. Okay, I guess I had the final word on that.
I thought you were taking a call or something.
Well, I thought so too. Kyle's confusing me here. Did we have a call or not? I
didn't get it in time.
It rang like 10 times. All right. The person who called, call back, 802-321-4225. And I guess we'll just wait in silence.
Yeah, it was very confusing there for a second.
Do I really have to be talking all the time?
It's deafening here. Yeah.
Well, you know, I can say continuing the conversation about this. You know, I have worked many retail jobs in my day. I'm working one now, and you know, if somebody comes in and steals stuff, what am I going to do? I am not going to physically try and stop somebody. I don't know if they have a weapon or anything. I am not a law enforcement person. That is not my line of work. That's just going to happen. And that is part of the risk of having a shop. That is part of the risk of selling things. But I don't know. It just seems like something that has been sort of co-opted by huge companies like Target. And this goes back to what I was saying about food deserts on the radio hour, where it is a big company comes into town, forces out the small businesses, forces out the little guys, forces out the people that, the public might care about a little more than your Targets or what have you. And then they fail to do it, and then they close down, and then what is the neighborhood left with? It's sad.
That's a part of it. That's not all of it. So I don't want that to be the excuse that, because Starbucks kicked out the locally owned coffee shop, that's why people are ripping off Starbucks. No, they probably rip off the local shop as well. I mean, people who don't care will do that. But when it becomes the trend that you just have big box stores and chains everywhere, people tend to care less, and you will see more of a degradation in that community spirit. But Rob, you know, as a retailer, if somebody were to do something like that to you, rip you off in some way, well, okay, it's unfortunate, but you have to, basically balance whether you want to get into it with somebody or whether you just want to let it go. I think what the caller said before about what happened in Walgreens, where some guy tried to interject, I think that person was an idiot. Don't ever try to do that. You could be killed over, something, somebody is shoplifting at Walgreens, and Walgreens isn't going to care. They're not going to, pay for your funeral or anything like that. No, they just, they're going to be Walgreens, and you can't expect them to be anything else. But when you see that person come into your shop again, you will be prepared. You'll know this person's up to no good, and you can warn people. You can take precautions. You know, they won't be at an advantage all the time. They will do something bad. You know they're going to do something bad. You'll tell others they'll do something bad, and then they'll have a harder time getting through to do more bad things. People will be more suspicious of them. It's not a pleasant way to live when people assume you're up to no good.
Don't you think, Emmanuel, this would be a great use case for facial recognition technology?
Oh, my God. Well, the argument is going to be made for sure. Absolutely.
And, no doubt.
I don't know. I'm not prepared. I'm not prepared to figure out how to convince somebody not to use facial recognition in that kind of a situation.
It's a good point because it's diffuse when it's small retailers that maybe have a phone tree or network. They call each other. They say this person is not, you know, they're 86. We don't mess with them. They're in the neighborhood.
Right.
That's a slower way, but it's different when it's a big chain that. All of a sudden introduces cameras or whatever kind of entry thing that diverts people who are on a blacklist.
Look at Madison Square Garden, what they did to people that were lawyers that they didn't want to let into their venues.
Yep.
They had a very efficient way of doing that. You know, okay, if Walgreens wants to do that amongst Walgreens outlets, I guess fine, do that. I have a problem when it's the government doing it. I have a problem when it becomes part of society. You know, and it's kind of like the surveillance cameras. Like, yeah, run your own surveillance system, but you control it and you give it to the cops if you want to give it to the cops, not if they demand it. And, you know, it's different than having the government itself or the police department or the city or whatever running it all. That is when it becomes unhealthy.
But if you already have some, like, you already feel like you have nothing to lose and you're not in a position where you have access to e-commerce, like you're connected and you have an address and all of that, and then all of a sudden you can't go to any kind of retail stores. It's I think again not really. It's creating even more of depths and and agony for people that may already be addicted to something or just disillusioned and going to continue to escalate, do other things, and maybe get caught in another situation. But
you know, I think it's this speaks to knowing people in the neighborhood.
Yeah.
You know, we watched the show based in Chicago, The Chi. Great show. My big complaint about it is that everybody seems to know each other, and that's a limitation of the writing and the way it's put together. But it also is how a community is built when everybody knows each other. And you know, oh, this guy is having trouble, or this guy acts in a dishonorable way. You all can be prepared. You all can maybe even help the person. But when we don't know each other, we don't know what we're capable of, we're suspicious of everybody, I think that's when it becomes more unhealthy. And, I noticed in the East Village, for instance, in New York City, people seem to know each other. You know, you walk into a shop and the person knows you, knows what you want, because people shop locally. And you can do that inside a city as well. And you can have the same small town values, the positive small town values in a big city. So we're not that different. We have a phone call who's been very patient. And good evening. You're on Overtime. Go ahead.
Oh, hi, Overtime. It's Ann Anonymous in Ulster County. And I had to get off the YouTube to make the call. This is very non-technical little phone. A word or thought, yes, it's a 5-cent flip phone. It's not set up right. The shoplifting thing, I have mixed thoughts about it. And part of it is, well, one of the many, many things, for thinking about for someone like me, I am in my 60s, and I saw all of the mom-and-pop shops of all different kinds, be it food, groceries, arts and crafts, all kinds of stores, health food stores, go out, succumb to big corporations late 70s through 80s and into the 90s. And, I'm speaking for myself, but I'm also speaking for others who are not on the phone, I believe, here, are angry, resentful, feel I'm shopping in stores that I don't respect, don't like, even really, really despise, a very common kind of shoplifting now is taking food, eating food, and not paying for the food. You're not going to get caught in the sense you're not leaving with anything that's on you, and you're stealing without any chance of someone, because by the time you get to the front of the store, the food is in your belly. I have done it a couple of times. I have done it a couple of times in the last year in Walmart on purpose, out of anger, out of that I'm forced to shop. You know what it is for me. I did it twice. I wanted to do this. Maybe it was an experiment. It's an active act of disrespect.
Uh-huh.
It's wrong and it's not an answer at all. I'm just trying to shed the tiniest bit of light on one more aspect of shoplifting, and it seems to me that eating and not paying for it has gotten bigger and bigger and is growing, and I'm sure there's all different kinds of people doing
eating something in Walmart. I think you might have already paid the price.
obviously, local stores where I've used the deli, when I buy the food, forks and plastic silverware that they had in one place in the store, because so many people are doing this now, it's at a different place in the store. So this is obviously a big thing. But people are so disgusted with being forced to spend money in these stores that I don't want to really have anything to do with, because it's the only things that are around. It's a sign of, seems to me from other people too, that I've seen, it's a sign of disrespect. I wasn't particularly hungry, you know.
Right.
It's a very, very lowly way of an absurd type of activism.
But you know it was wrong. You know it was wrong to do this, but it was an expression, and sometimes we express ourselves in ways that we know are not considered acceptable, whether it's civil disobedience or even vandalism. There are ways of expressing ourselves where, you know, it's not violent, but it's also not considered proper. We have to balance it. We have to measure, is this, you know, worth, you know, a SWAT team showing up or anything like that? Is this the breakdown of society completely?
Right. Nobody's going to show up from eating. Point taken, and of course you're right. It's a very crude form of civil disobedience, very crude. And, another thing, are you familiar in Walmart, there is an employee stands here in Ulster County, pardon me, the employee stands, and you after you've done your shopping and paid, when you get to the main the exit, you have to stop and show the person that you have to hand the person your receipt, and they go through all of your bags as you're standing at the door.
I actually was in a Walmart within the last couple of months because they were the only place I had a $3 item I needed. But that was not the case in that particular one. It might be something that some have this policy and some don't. It's not just Walmart either. It's you know, I remember Best Buy did that at some point, and various other
some of the clubs.
Yeah, and it causes
the discount clubs.
Is it legal?
I think it varies by state. Actually, Alex, you would probably know if this is legal or not.
Mm-hmm. I was never a Walmart shopper. I've been there a few times in the last couple of years, and I boycotted it for decades. But I'm asking if it's legal in the sense that, and I wonder because that's my property, and after I've bought it, it's my property and my cart, my bags, etc.
Right.
And when they're going through it, and if you tell them, no, I'm not interested in having you do this, they'll let you know, we are going to do this. And I mean, no one is going to make a case out of this legally, I doubt.
Well, I think some people have made a case. I want to ask Alex, do you have any input on this?
Yeah, I think it's objectionable for them to do it, but I think that they can get away with it, right? Because you also have to remember that the Fourth Amendment, your privacy interests in particular, and the prohibitions against searches, well, that only applies to the government, and for a while only applied to the federal government, not even the states, until the Doctrine of Incorporation applied the Bill of Rights to the states. But here you have a private company saying, essentially, you play by our rules on our private property. So unless it amounts to something like a civil rights violation, which I don't think it does, you know, it's going to be hard to bring some kind of legal claim for that. So,
I don't think any store in their right mind is going to physically tackle somebody and go through their bags, because, you know, just the PR from that alone would be detrimental to them.
Well, you'd be surprised. I mean, it just takes one idiot, you know, who takes his job too seriously. Yeah,
that is true.
Or something like that.
Hang on, Alex, first, then the caller.
Yeah, I just wanted to tell you, caller, I have a Walmart near me, where near my place in Pennsylvania, and we have the same person that goes and checks your receipts. But I find that she never really checks the receipts, that essentially she just looks to see if you have a receipt, and then looks to see if the amount of items on the receipt somewhat resemble the number of items in your bag, and then lets you go. She never really looks at things.
Yeah, the Price Club type stores do that too, I believe.
Yeah. So it's not a thing. But I will tell you, a long time ago, when I was a law clerk, and I had documents and stuff on me, and I was leaving a Price Club or a Sam's Club or something like that over near Pentagon City. And I just gotten my eyes checked, and I had my prescription as well in my bag. So I had this medical record one thing in this attaché case. And on the way out, the security guard insisted on me opening up my bag and showing him the contents of my bag. And I just said, no. You can't, like, you know, absolutely not. You know, I'm not letting you do that. And I said, well, you know, and they made a big deal out of this whole thing. And I didn't back down about it. To me, it was a matter of principle. And I said, well, look, you know, there's a sign right up here, you know, that says, and they pointed to the sign above the exit that said, we reserve the right to inspect all contents and bags.
Wait, it's above the exit? Was it above the entrance?
That's exactly what I said. I picked up on that. That was exactly the argument I made. Which is, you know, a sign that I see only on the way out of the store doesn't mean I consented to it on the way in. You know, that's just totally crazy. And I held my ground, and they let me go without looking in my bag. But it caused a big scene. And, you know, people looked at me like I was some kind of, you know, shoplifter reluctantly not opening my bag, because why else would this guy not open up his bag unless he stole something? What have you got to hide? Well, I don't want people just looking at my medical records in there as a matter of principle. It pissed me off. But nobody has time for this crap.
Yeah.
You know, if you did that every time you went to the store, you'd never leave the house again.
And that's what we keep coming back to. People don't have time to challenge injustice, and that's why injustice prevails, because it just, you know, it's somebody with a louder voice gets away with something.
It's a maze of life. I can't put it any more simply that it's just you're being molded and shaped and contorted just to eat, just to get by, just to have any kind of any sense of a life. You have to navigate all this, and it's totally understandable, this sort of anti-consumer response. Of like, and I've seen it in grocery stores, you know, half-eaten things and stuff, where people are just like disrespectful because what, you know, the idea that, oh, this store's going to go away, the one that destroyed every other store. Yeah, you know, that being the worst thing that this sort of activity results in, people are like, the hell with it, and I can totally relate.
Yeah, and it causes, you know, a degree of disrespect and bad feelings and things like that, but it's unlikely to be the reason why a store goes out of business, a big store, that is. Probably the reason a store goes out of business is because of online retailing. Most likely it's something more like that, because that's really cutting a significant percentage out of the sales that they were used to in the past. Some people coming in, even if they're organized gangs of people on occasion, I don't think that's enough to really have that significant a dent in the profits of any one store. I'm not saying it's not a problem, but I don't think it's something that is going to put something out of business.
But imagine a landscape where there are no regular customers anymore. You just have all this retail other than vacant stores that have already gone out of business.
Right.
You just have these places with all these items, all this merchandise just out.
Yeah,
and it's like looking like a Target.
It's a Target. That's funny because Target's the store that's closing. But no, it's you see people coming into your store, and that's unusual. So you view them with suspicion. Uh-huh. What are they up to? They have to be up to something bad because there's so few customers. So I think that's a part of it. Anyway, Carla, we've talked too much. Any final thoughts from you?
Oh no! It was very good to hear everything that you said. I was lost listening to it. Thank you for everything you're saying is interesting and good and important and true.
Well, thanks for sharing and listening to us this evening.
Yes.
Oh, thanks, guys. Thanks. See you next time.
All right. Take care. We had some good calls tonight. Really good calls. I'm very happy with them, but. All good things must come to an end, and that's where we are now. Any final thoughts, folks?
I'm sorry we couldn't solve the shoplifting issue here on Off the Hook.
We don't have a shoplifting issue on Off the Hook, okay? That's why I'm clear that up right away. We've got that under control. But in the rest of the country, yeah, there's some issues, and we have to deal with them. Deal with it like an extended family, like people misbehaving. You gotta do something about that. I guess write to us, oth@2600.com. And we'll be back next week with another edition of Overtime as well as Off the Hook at 7 p.m. Any final words? No?
No, I don't have anything.
Oh, see you next week. Good night.
Good night, everyone.
Stay tuned.